Honourable members, I would like to welcome all of you back to our first meeting of the year. And in front of us, we have our agenda, which is the first point is the election of the chairperson, and then it will be followed by the briefing by the department on the city landscape as well as the NSDS tree. So without wasting...
Before you proceed, Chair, can we request the department not to be part, because I don't think procedurally they can be part of this process of election of the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mekubai. I would like the department to excuse us just to elect the chairperson, and we'll call you after. Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, according to the rules of the National Assembly, Rule 129, it says a committee must elect one of its members as the chairperson of the committee. The chairperson will be responsible for presiding over the meetings and other related functions. So, honorable members, without any waste of time, I would like to call for the nomination for the election of the chairperson. May I have any proposal? Thanks, Ms. Kubai.
Thank you, chairperson of the session. I hereby nominate Advocate Ishmael Malale as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee Higher Education and Training.
Thank you very much, Kubai. Can I get any second? Ms. Mishan? Thank you very much. Honorable members, are there any opposition to this? Thank you very much. Honorable members, I would like to announce Advocate Ishmael Malale as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, and I would like to request the chairperson to come and take the seat. Thank you very much.
Session, can we allow a few minutes of congratulatory remarks towards the advocate?
Thanks.
Thanks. On behalf of the African National Congress, I would like to congratulate Advocate Ishmael Malale for his election as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education and Training, and wish him all the best in the commitment and the responsibility that has been given to him, and committing ourselves as the African National Congress for cooperation and fruitful working relationship, and saying to him he has his our full support as the party.
Chairperson, on behalf of the DI, I would like to congratulate you on your election as our new chairperson. We really are looking forward to working with you. It's a great privilege to be a member of Parliament, and it's also a very great privilege to be part of education, specifically higher education. We are well aware of the fact that the real work in Parliament happens in portfolio committee meetings, and you can count on the input of me and my colleague, very positive input regarding this portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. On behalf of ASAPO, also just to firstly welcome you to this committee. We are aware that you were elsewhere. We welcome you, but also congratulate you on your election as a chairperson. Just say to you, we enjoyed good working relations with the former chairperson, Honorable Franz Mann, and we are also looking forward to a healthy, good working relationship with you. You can be assured of our support, as we continue to work for the nation to improve education in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also on behalf of the DA, I would like to add my voice to that of my colleague, Honourable Dr. Klopas Lourens. I have learned that you've come from Scopa and that you've had good experience and played a big role there in setting a wonderful example of what the oversight function of this Parliament can and should be. And we are looking forward also learning from the wisdom and the experience that you've gained there to bring that to this committee. I think you will find that everybody on this committee share the same concerns about the education, and particularly for this committee, the higher education and training system of our country. And therefore, we are looking forward to working together as one committee to achieve the goals and the ideals that we all have for this country, and especially for those who need to develop their skills and their knowledge further. But welcome, and we will also formally welcome you in writing later on. Thank you.
Any other comrade would like to make any input or comments?
Good morning, my colleagues. I miss you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Nolita Vugoza Linda. I don't know what other people told you about themselves, but I represent COPE, Congress of the People, and I'm the only one because we are thin on numbers from you guys to DA and then it's me and so on. So I have in the last 18 months or so since we joined enjoyed the committee so much. It's a pity Honorable Khadebe has just left, because sometime last year when he joined us, he came from a very volatile committee. He was astonished to see that one, we ate at one table, and two, that we kissed and hugged each other. And he says, "What are you opposition?" Yeah, we are opposition. So first of all, the fact is that, yes, there is opposition, and I'm sure you're not coming across opposition for the first time. But I do want to say on behalf of the Congress of the People that we are into the development of this country, and that whatever we oppose, we will be opposing it because there is a need to do that. And it does not mean anything except for that. At that particular point in time, we'll feel that we need to be doing something else. So it is healthy. I suppose it also strengthens the majority party that you can have in opposition for that matter. So I am looking forward to working with you. When we laughed, Honorable Franzman, so you are by no means him. So we're not going to try and recreate him from you. We're going to try to engage you the way you come across, but be assured that we have every good intention in terms of working with you. And that, yeah, your committee is quite an assertive one, and I'm sure you will get used to that quite quickly, and good luck. Yeah.
Colleagues, I'd like to appreciate the very wonderful congratulatory messages from colleagues. It is a great sense of trepidation for me to be joining the hard kitchen terrain. It must be a complex field, and I think I'll be learning on a daily basis. I'm equally looking forward to working together with wonderful people that you are. This is our shared responsibility. We've got a great challenge of leading the transformation of this field and ensuring higher access for many people that come from poor families. I also must appreciate the good work that Colonel Franzman had been doing in this committee before his appointment as a deputy minister, and hope to continue where he had left with the strong team that I have. I'm from the background of Scopa, enjoying interrogating departments, but here we'll be doing it a bit differently, focusing on a single portfolio. I think perhaps we can do that better. Let me then take this opportunity to advise members that we are going to be receiving a presentation from the Ministry of Education and Training, and maybe I would ask members to introduce themselves formally for those officials who they don't know, other members to know who they are. Thereafter, ask the ministry to also introduce themselves, and at least have allowed them to make their presentation. The members would be permitted an opportunity to ask questions and make commentary on the report, and then we can see how we finalize the meeting. Thank you. Can I then ask members to start introducing themselves?
Thank you, Chair. For the second time, for your benefit as well, my name is Nolita Vukuza. It's a double barrel, but Vukuza will suffice. And good morning to the members of the department. Chair, thank you for this opportunity. I did look at the agenda, and if I may ask the Chair to indulge us, is that whilst the officials are here from the department, we welcome the landscape of the CETA and so on, the things that you want to share with us. But surely we cannot not seize the moment of asking you what is going on now as we speak in the tertiary institution. What is the process? Is the registration going on? What is the access like? We cannot just leave that alone. We'd like to be appraised of that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mamoloko. I am known as Kensani Kubai, a member of this committee and the WIP as well. And I think just to say from my side, the disappointment, Chair, you note is that we would appreciate to receive documents in advance so that we are able to read them and that we have valuable contributions when we engage. And that's my disappointment for today's meeting, that the documents in terms of the topics or the items before were not sent to us in advance so that we can be able to interrogate and read, so that we don't start reading while we are sitting here instead of listening and engaging properly. So it limits our ability of doing proper oversight when we don't receive the documents in advance. And as we begin the year, I would appreciate that the department and the ministry, together through the committee secretary, that they afford us the opportunity to be able to do our work as members of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nziki Magazi. I'm the member of this committee, also the member of the communications committee.
Yeah, good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Foni Mushwana, hailing from Limpopo. My background is education. I was a teacher from the foundation phase and then went to the senior phase and went to the management. So you can definitely count on me to participate. Thank you.
Honorable members and Chair in particular, I'm Silent Makubela from Limpopo, you should know probably. you can really or sincerely count on our support and good working relations beyond the fact that we belong to the same party. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Balale. I count on the leadership, my leader. And I promise that we'll be able to provide necessary support up to the end. My name is Soka Tebe from Mpumalanga, where the sun rises. One of the senior masses, I lead the masses on the ground. Thank you.
No. Good morning once more. And just to wish all members productive year, and for this committee also. I'm Jake Dikobo. I'm a member of the committee. I'm a teacher by profession. Fairly new member of the committee. I think other than you, I'm the second newest member of the committee. And well, like I said, I'm a teacher coming from the trade union movement. Last year, when we were reading reports, I had to, you know, be quiet, having been, when the CETAs were reporting, I sat in the board of the CETA, I sat in that leg. Thanks.
Like Nolita, I also have a double barrel surname. I'm Janita Kloppers-Lowens. I carry heavily on with this double barrel surname. What I would like to do is also underline the importance of what Ms. Kubai said about getting the documentation, preferably before the weekend, before our meetings. We are a keen group of people and we would like to prepare properly before meetings. And then just a question regarding the study tour that was cancelled at the end of this month. We don't have any information regarding this tour. Is it possible for us to get some more information? Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Andrikus van der Westhuizen. I'm here from the Western Cape, so in that sense, perhaps my life is the easiest of all the members of this committee. I left the insurance industry 30 years ago to go into teaching, and then progressed to a deputy principal of an FET college. In my last 2 years at the college, I was involved with the learnerships and skills implementation, and then from there I went on to the education department as a quality assurer of schools in terms of the whole school evaluation system. I'm grateful to have been able to come over to this committee from trade and industry in October of last year, so it seems to me we need to boast how new we are on the block. So I'm also not too old in that sense, and I think you will pick up from me a real concern and regarding the skills development and the further education and training as well as higher education sector. I may just add that I'm serving a third term now on the University Council of one of our institutions. Thank you.
Can I ask maybe the officials from the department to introduce themselves?
Thank you, Chairperson, the chief whip, the whip of the committee and the members. My name is Percy Moleke. I'm the Deputy Director General for Skills Development in the Department of Higher Education and Training. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and also members of the committee. I'm Nokthula Ngaba, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer from the Office of the Minister.
I'm Zakere Samane from the Office of the DG.
I think the Ministry and our officials have noted the concerns that are advanced by honourable members in relation to receipt of documentation prior to the commencement of our meetings, in fact, early in time, so that they are able to have ample opportunity to peruse the documents, reflect on them, and prepare themselves for the meeting and make constructive and valuable inputs to try and help the department run the government properly. Now, can I take this opportunity to ask the department to make the presentation? I don't know the form they're going to do it. I'll give them an opportunity to do so.
Thank you, Chairperson. The whip and members of the committee and colleagues from the department and others who are here. I would like to take this opportunity to firstly sincerely apologize on behalf of the department and the ministry. We have made a number of mistakes, which we are very much aware of. We don't want to make excuses, but I was saying to the whip, who I know from, we have the same previous lives, that I knew government work is difficult, but I didn't realize how difficult working in a line function department is, and that's no excuse, but we need to work better. I am fairly new in the department as well. I have been in the department since the beginning of September, so I'm almost 4 months there. In fact, I started on the 17th of September. And then when I started, there were a number of backlogs which we had to deal with in the area of skills development, and we had to move with speed. And in the process, we flawed and made mistakes with regards to process. I have recently been briefed by my colleague on the meeting that was held, where a number of issues were raised, and issues related to process were agreed upon. But despite that, we didn't follow that. We didn't stick to that agreement, and we should have. So I recognize that. I only learned about some of these things recently, and we will rectify them. I think together we will rectify them. From my side, I can only say that there is a commitment to work together with the portfolio committee. And I must say, and when we get to the discussion, we'll also reiterate that in my view, even before I got a briefing on the portfolio committee, my sense has always been that this is one of the most important institutions that we have to work with, especially us in the skills development area. And together, I think we will make a difference, especially with regard to the CETAs, which are our institutions. So I am also pleading and saying I am also going to be dependent on the members to assist in our work of making sure that we take skills development to a higher level and make sure that the CETAs work more effectively and efficiently. I also would like to apologize in the same spirit for not sending the documents in advance. Chairperson, I was saying to Noctula that the least that I could do at least today was bring 4 copies of the NSDS, and that's about all we have. And I had to recall the 4 copies from the other people in the office so that I can at least bring some copies. But we are going to give every member copies of the NSDS 3. It was launched on the 18th, which was last week. We had made just a few copies. Now, where we held the event of the launch was where the ANC Lekgotla was taking place. So what happened is all the extra copies that we had to leave at the venue, but then also distribute to the CETAs as well and so on. So we're making extra copies so that everyone would have a copy. But also there is a soft copy on our website. We are also going to make sure that the members here get a soft copy of that as well, so that would be distributed. And also going forward, we are going to work better and make sure that members get the copies in advance as much as we possibly can. I would also like to apologize for the acting director general of the department, who is not here and could not be here today, and members know that there is the cabinet Lekgotla going on, so he had to attend to that. Having said that, Chairperson, I would like then to proceed. And then I've noted the comment and on the appraisal on the process with regard to registrations and so on, and we'll get to that. on issues where I am aware, I will appraise the members because it's also other branches that are involved. Thank you. On the landscape, the background with regard to process in brief is that in April 2010, the department published a proposal on the new landscape. The National Skills Authority did a consultation process, undertook a consultation process on that proposal, and based on the feedback that they got from the consultation process, they then compiled an advice for the minister. And this is as per the Skills Development Act, which requires that the process should be followed as such. So this is just a process in brief. I didn't want to go into lengthy details. Based on that, then the department further took the advice from the NSA, but also applied its mind on the proposal and advised the minister. So the minister then applied his mind and weighted the various options that were presented to him and made a decision and announced that decision on the 9th of November. Chairperson and the members, for the few documents that I could distribute earlier, I distributed a word document which provides the details of the landscape. And we can talk to that. So the presentation is basically just a brief overview of this, but the details are in the presentation, I mean in that word document. Now the purpose of the landscape process, it is not meant to address the performance of the CETAs. It is a process that is related to the certification or recertification of the CETAs as per Skills Development Act. So it's not necessarily meant to address the performance of CETAs, although it may have impact due to efficiency gains and so on. So it's just a process as per Skills Development Act to recertificate the CETAs, which has to be done every 5 years. As I indicated, that it is per the SDA. There are a number of principles that guided the new landscape, which I must also indicate that it is effective from the 1st of April 2011. The minister has, on many occasions, indicated that the CETAs are here to stay. And when we were doing the proposals on the landscape, we took that into account. Because in the public eye, there are those who are for and against the CETAs. There's always been a lot of noise, so to speak, in scientific language, the noise that CETAs must be closed down. And the minister was saying, or has been saying, and is still saying, I'm not going to close down the CETAs. So the landscape proposal was responding to that in part as well. Now the question that we are all asking ourselves is, while the minister has said the CETAs are here to stay, the question is, in what form and what will they be doing? And those are the questions that relate to issues related to performance of the CETAs. The minister could have taken the option of closing down the CETAs. It is allowed in the FDA. But he is saying, I am recognizing this institution, that they are important institutions. We have a huge challenge of skills development in this country. We have to address that. Closing down the institutions that we have and the resources that we have for the skills development levy is not going to help us address that problem. So we need to address the problem. We have the institutions and the resources. How do we make them work better? So those are some of the principles that were guiding the re-establishment of the CETAs. There are other broad considerations that informed the landscape. as the members would know, that we are now talking about a post-school system to try and address the skills needs and the skills development challenges that we have in this country of a broader group of young people, but also of adults. So taking that into account, we have this huge challenge, we have the institutions, so you can't close down some of the institutions when you have this huge challenge. We were also guided by the following other principles. We wanted to ensure that there is broad coverage of skills development in all key sectors of the economy, ensure that each sector is located as close as possible to its relevant economic sector, introduce changes. We made sure that they do not disrupt, or they would have minimal disruption where it is absolutely necessary. And they were also informed by the new growth path, which has been recently adopted by government, as well as the imperatives of the industrial action plan and other government priorities, the rural development, health, education, crime prevention, and so on. The other key consideration was financial viability of the CETA. So on financial viability, for example, one of the things that came out of the landscape consultation processes was that we need to have a CETA that caters for the skills needs of the social sector and the NGO sector and so on, because it is a huge sector. The NSA and the department applied its mind, investigated the possibility of establishment of that CETA because of its importance. But then we found that it would not be financially viable. So we couldn't then propose that a CETA of that sort be established. But then what we did in that regard is, and we continue to do, is talking to the other CETAs and saying, in your various CETAs, make sure that you create a chamber that accommodates that sector, and we are going to follow up with that. So for example, with ETDP, we've already done that. So today I'm doing this broad, and I think we'll have to have a continuous discussion with the members so that members also understand the details of this, so that you can assist us in the oversight responsibility of these institutions to make sure that a sector like the NGO sector, as I've made an example, and the social sector, which we are saying is not catered for by any CETA, currently a specific CETA, but then we have to make sure that all the other CETAs cater for it. So when we perform our oversight responsibility to these CETAs, we must follow up on that and make sure that it does happen. And that's why I say the details of this we'll continuously engage on and make sure that we're all on the same page on this chapter. And it's a continuous process. You know, so today it's just a broad, and then the details of it will also come up in the discussion. So the new landscape, in the presentation, it's not there, but in the web document that was circulated, you have a list of all the new CETAs. The changes that were made in the new landscape, the 18 CETAs are going to remain the same or have minimal C-code transfer as follows. There are 12 CETAs which are to be re-established with no change. The list is in that document. And then there are 6 CETAs which are to be re-established with C-code transfers. So the CETAs remain the same. Those 6 CETAs, they will remain the same, but then there would be a few C-code transfers from one CETA to another. And then there are 2 CETAs which are affected by insignificant changes based on receiving subsectors from the MEP CETA. And then there are 3 CETAs then which are affected by significant changes. Significant changes being these 3 CETAs are being dissolved. A new CETA is going to be established which is going to receive C-codes from these 3 CETAs which are affected significantly, but as I indicated in the bullet point before, MEP CETA, for example, is one of the CETAs which are affected by significant changes, so we dissolving MEP CETA. But some of its C codes are going to the other 2 CETAs, not to the new sitter. And then the peace sitter is going to be re-established for a year only, pending an interministerial task team process that was agreed upon by Minister Nzimande and Minister Baloyi to investigate the viability and operational model of the peace sitter. Members will know that the peace sitter is a huge challenge. I mean, all the sitters are a challenge, but the peace sitter has got its unique challenges. One of the challenges is that it has been located in the Department of Public Service and Administration. And the idea was we should not duplicate the peace sitter and Palama. So they had to be brought together. But then over the years, we've had serious challenges to an extent that the peace sitter literally was just not functioning properly. The members, I think, late last year received a report on the peace sitter. So you know some of the challenges that resulted from that operational model. So we need to resolve that issue. But it's a broader issue. One of the rationales, for the approach to the peace sitter, which, as I said, is related to a much broader issue, is it has to do with how the Skills Development Act defines the role of the public sector as an employer in skills development. The public sector is exempt from contributing or from paying the levy. So there's paying and contributing. As per the Skills Development Act, the public sector is exempt from paying the levy. So it doesn't pay the 1%. But the Skills Development Act says that they can contribute towards the 10% administration of every sitter. So you have some sitters which are doing that. And the Act also stipulates that every government or public sector agency must put aside 1% of their wage bill for training. But then it doesn't get channeled into the skills development resource as is with the other employers. So we're leaving it to the public sector basically to even monitor that and so on. So that's stipulated in the Act. But we then in practice have a situation where we had established the peace sitter and we have the LG sitter as well, which is largely government. Let me just say that for the benefit of the members who do not know that the Act in fact says government and every agency or institution that receives 80% or more of their income from voted funds is exempt from paying the levy. So it's not just only government departments as we know them. It's government and all the other agencies which receive most of their income or 80% or more of their income from voted funds. They're exempt. So some of them do participate by contributing to the administration of the CETA budget, but it's also not consistent. So 1 month some contribute, the other month they don't contribute. 1 month they contribute 1 million, the next month the very same government department contributes 800,000. You know, there's that inconsistency. So there's a broader, bigger problem with regard to public sector contribution and participation in the skills development. And that interministerial task team is meant to address some of these issues. We are also preparing a document for the minister to take to cabinet, so that cabinet can try and resolve some of these things once and for all. And it's something that we are also going to be discussing with the members to try and brainstorm this. So it's a concept note that we're working on, and then we'll have to discuss it and consult on it and get other ideas as well and see what is the practicality of public sector playing a role. And if we are talking about a developmental state that has to lead and we have skills development challenges in the public sector, so what should the role of the public sector be in the skills development area? So I've spoken to some of this, in fact, the proposals to address the PCTA, change the legislation. We can change the legislation to remove contribute and replace it with pay, that the public sector should pay. But that's a very long process to change the legislation. And that's why we're looking at other options of consultation, because it is the government, it's the public sector. So aren't there other ways that we can do this quicker? And there's an agreement while we embark on the process of changing the legislation. What we also know that if we can get an agreement in government, then it means we have to improve our enforcing roles to make sure that it does happen. We were having a meeting with SARS last week, and this issue came up, and SARS was indicating to us the complexity of this as well. So it means there has to be enforcement of the rule if it is done, and it's not done through the amendment of the legislation, but through an agreement in government. But we also know that it means that we have then to remove the PCTA from CPSA. PCTA cannot operate within the DPSA. But it also raises question as to whether then you have a PCTA which then caters for everyone in government, or how do you deal with it? What is the mortality of then public sector paying the levy or participating in the skills development? Because the public sector, unfortunately, unlike other employers, is a huge employer and is a multi-sectoral employer. So you have doctors in the public sector who are catered for in the health and welfare sector. You have engineers who will be catered for in the math sector. And then you have other skills in the public sector, which are not necessarily catered for in any sector. And hence the PCTA was meant to cater for that. But still there is no proper clarity. So we need to clarify our minds on what would then be the mortality of public sector's participation in the skills development. So those are some of the things, the questions that we have to engage on and get answers. Now, as I indicated that the CETA landscape doesn't address performance issues. It may based on efficiency, but it doesn't. And as I said as well on that slide, that the landscape as it has been announced, it is resting the issue that the CETAs are here to stay. The question is doing what, in what form, and doing what. In what form, we know a little bit of that because there is a landscape. We know we'll have 21 CETAs. So that is the form, and the economic sectors are described there and prescribed. So in that form, yes. But then what would they be doing? What is the role of the CETAs in skills development? And those are performance-related issues. We know the challenges. I mean, the members here know the challenges even much more better than most of us, because the CETA, you interact with the CETAs, and that is why your expertise and experience is very critical for us. But we know also there has been a number of research done on this issue. There was a NetLife report, there was a Singisi report, the HSRC, in the department as well, there are other reports. And as I indicated, the portfolio committee reports and experiences, there is your engagement with the CETAs. We have the AG reports, which also, you know, the one of the interesting things for me is most of our CETAs, in fact, get unqualified reports. But then what we are engaging them on is your unqualified report doesn't necessarily mean that you are clean. And that's one of the things that we have to now start looking into. And that's why one of the things that we are going to be doing is we're going to be bringing in the accountant general, who is different from the auditor general, as we know. but we have to find a way to bring in the Accountant General to assist us with the accounting process, so that while they get the unqualified report, the auditor says, well, you know, you can report on all the money that you spent. We know that some of this money is spent on things that we don't want them to spend the money on. And the Accountant General will assist in picking up those. Members pick them up most of the time when you engage with the CETAs. The public knows about some of these things. They bring them to our attention. But then we can't pick them up in our reports. So we need to improve on that. But we currently have the AG reports, which also, as I said, does give us a sense of what the challenges are. Now, in the future, we are saying we need to take advantage of all of this information from all these various sources to improve on the performance of the CETAs, and we haven't started to do that. Apologies for that, I didn't switch it off. Now, to address the performance of the CETAs, the minister has appointed a task team to advise on how to improve the functioning and performance of CETAs. The team will be led by Mr. Fikile Majola. We will share with the members the names of the other team members. We are having a meeting with the team members soon to finalize the terms of reference of that team. And the team, it is a huge responsibility. As we all know, that the challenges in the sector are many. But some of the things that they will be looking at include refocusing the CETA activities through the National Skills Development Strategy that has been launched recently, initiating a process to strengthen the CETA sector skills plans, and aligning this to much tighter service level agreements and reporting mechanism, ensuring that we build the capacity of the QCTO to be the main accreditor of training providers so that the CETAs concentrate on their role as facilitators of education and training in the workplace, improve for the future the current model constitution of CETAs as best practice guideline to improve accountability and performance of CETAs, boards and governance, improve cooperation between and among CETAs, and there are many other tasks that they will be looking on. I can share with the members, and it's not simply because I'm here speaking to you, but I can share with the members that in our thinking when we drafting the task, the terms of reference, which I said is a draft we're going to finalize with the CETAs. One of the items in the terms of reference is that the team must come and engage with the portfolio committee, because there are a number of issues that the members are aware of and would like to share with the department, so that we use that information to improve on the performance of CETAs. So they would be coming to the members, but we'll follow proper processes with regard to that. The other things that we are doing is with regard to performance is we are trying to refocus the training through the NSDS3, and I will skip the slide because I'm going to talk to NSDS3. But it's also saying that looking at the performance of CETAs, this is one of the things that we will be looking at. Just to give members a flavor of what we are saying in the constitution of the CETAs, we know that currently the way the things work in the CETAs, I mean, each CETA has got a constitution, and part of what should the constitution be is prescribed by the SDA. But there is room as well for the minister to intervene to make sure that we change some of these things. Now, we are purposefully doing this to address the governance in the CETA boards. We know the challenges in the CETA boards, that other members in the CETA boards, they treat the CETA boards as a negotiation forum, because you have business, you have labor, you have community, you have everyone there. Some of the stories that come out, if I may to allow, maybe allow to humor the members, is we were told that in one of the theaters, or in they say it happens often, when I'm the representative of business and it's my turn to chair the board. Sorry. I'm not sure. I may have added it, but we'll share it. The members will give you an updated version. You know how we do presentations and you add, and so I may have added it later. Is it there? It is. Unfortunately, there are no page numbers, but it is there. Some members have it. Okay. But I was saying that what happens in most sitters is if I'm the chairperson of the board, this 10, and I'm representing business, then it's whatever decision is made is biased towards business. And then the members who are in the board who represent labor and community and others, they don't have their way. But then instead of fighting, they just sit and say, well, go ahead, my turn is coming as well. So when it's the turn for labor to chair, then all the decisions that were made when business was chairing are reversed. And then in that period, then it's all the decisions that favor organized labor. And then it's a cycle. So no wonder the CETAs are in a situation that they are in. It's because it's my turn, and then we do things my way. Next time it's someone else's turn, we do things their way. So there's no professionalism in the boards of most of the CETAs. It's not in every CETA, but we know it is in most CETAs. So the minister is saying, I'm purposefully wanting to intervene in the governance of the CETAs, which is the board, and he is within his rights to do this. So some of the things that we'll be doing with the new constitution, which is going to come into effect 1st of April, is make sure that for each CETA board, there is an independent chairperson. We want to limit the number of board meetings. There are CETA boards who have meetings like a staff meeting, you know, almost every month. I mean, it's a board, but then the board meets every month. And it's because there's money involved, people get paid and travel and so on. So we have to make sure that we manage that. Reduce the size of the boards. Some board sizes are a mass meeting replica. Make sure that the minister participates in the appointment of board members. Have a standard remuneration rate for board and committee members. Holding accountable board members who do not carry out their duties as required. And ministers should participate as much as possible in the appointment of CETA CEOs and other members of the executive committees of councils, in line with similar practices in relation to other public entities. Now, while it's good and well to say we want to do these things, as the department, we also recognize that it means we also have to improve from our side as a department. We have to improve capacity for us to be able to do this. And we have to make sure that we improve our monitoring of CETAs and their functions. And this will be informed by all of the above things that I've mentioned, but there are others as well. We should ensure that government, through the department and others, plays its oversight role. The minister has indicated in his talk to the CETA forum, he had a discussion in the CETA forum last year, and he made it very clear to the CETAs that he does not prefer to have an arm's length relationship with the CETAs. The CETAs are the public entities. He's got an oversight role, responsibility to play, and he is going to play. So the days of SITAs thinking that they are their own entities, independent, and no one is going to tell them what to do, has to come to an end. The days when SITAs think that when the minister says what you are doing is wrong and the minister is intervening, then they take the minister to court and challenge that, those days have to come to an end, because these are public entities. They are run on public money. It's the tax that they are run on, and they have to take that seriously. But we also have to make sure that we take that seriously. There's an expectation that as a collective, the department and the SITAs should deliver sector-specific skills interventions that help achieve the goals of the NSDS3, address employer demand and deliver concrete results, and make a decisive impact. And we have to make sure that we meet that expectation or those expectations. In conclusion, Chairperson and members, as I indicated, that for us, how do we in future collaborate and work together with the portfolio committee to take advantage of the information that you are able to gather when you interact with the SITAs and in your other responsibilities, to make sure that all of us, we work towards improving the performance of the SITAs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Colleagues, I think we're following the presentation. I'll give this opportunity to members to raise questions and commentary on the presentation by the department.
Thank you. Muleke. Thank you very much. I suppose some of the concerns I have can be taken, if there was to be time, can be dealt with by us only as a committee. And I'm saying it because I just need to understand, and I'm sure the chair and the whip, they have this in mind to say that I'm trying to place this presentation. I'm trying to place it, and I'm trying to place this presentation in the anatomy of the year. And I'm trying to understand whether what we're doing today is a roundup of what we were doing last year. So that we, and that's why I'm saying maybe I'll raise that when we are together only as a committee to say where do we go with this thing. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Muleke, again. I noted your several apologies, and I'm hoping that by next time you come, you will have reduced them at least by 3 or 4. You know, there were quite a number of them. We're very benevolent this year because it's the beginning of the year. I think that when I look at the presentation itself, for me, if you don't mind me commenting on it, is that it sounds like not so much the landscape of it's not so much the landscape of the SITAs than an attempt to consolidate the SITA landscape. In other words, here is not a landscape per se, because there's still work in progress. But I see that you are beginning to consolidate the landscape. But I'm sure by no means it is the final landscape of what it is, if you take into account the things that you are yet to do together with the ministry. So I just make that point, because it's not a landscape, but it's a consolidation of the landscape. Under the purpose of the landscape process, I just regret that first sentence,
that says the level pay process is not meant to address performance of the sitters. And I'm sure you applied your mind to it. Because surely the consolidation of the landscape must in fact translate itself into performance. Surely, yes, it is related to the recertification of the landscape and in accordance to the Act. So I think that so that probably we are not many that say, well, we are not trying to suggest that you are just doing it for no reason other than addressing the Act. But in fact, even if specifically the landscape of sitters was related to the recertification, but in general it is expected to impact on performance. So that is not lost, because at the end of it all, everything that we do must translate itself into that. So I think that you guys are shooting yourselves in the foot when you put that sentence like that, even though I understand the sentiment or the caution behind that one. I also think that, as you were saying, this is work in progress. I think that we would need to look at the vision of the sitters in general, you see, before we zoom into the whole segmentation of those sitters. And I'm sure somehow, as I hear you speak, I'm sure you will come up with the vision that we can all look forward to, that we can participate in shaping. And of course, locating that vision within the country vision as well, to say, why do we have sitters in order to do what and to achieve what? And just, I don't have much to say later, but there were just a few things I just noted, especially with regards to governance. I think that we have to strengthen the slide on addressing governance of the sitters. And we have to, because there's a lot there. For example, introducing independent chairpersons. For me, introducing independent chairpersons must in fact ensure wide representation of the same from various segments and sectors of society. Because again, you must understand that the participation of the minister must be accompanied by wide representation, so that oversight is played on the minister and the board, and so that it is in fact not whoever the minister wants to have, but somebody or people that ensure that there is wide representation in terms of competence, in terms of representation per se, and a whole lot of other reasons why we would do that. And for me, in terms of that governance, again, I would urge you to put there the whole issue of training of board members. Because if you then say that, you already are taking care of the rest of your slides, because you would say that you train board members in order to enhance performance and participation, and also to enhance accountability. So that the whole slide about holding the board accountable is really left onto the training of them, because that's really what we want to happen. Lastly, is the issue of monitoring. And again, I think I'd like to urge you to say, where does this monitoring lead us, and where is it linked to? Is it linked to the Ministry of Evaluation and Performance, or is it linked to something that links to that? So that it takes us through the whole supply chain of monitoring. And of course, we also need to understand from you, DDG, what the internal controls will be should the sitters not function in accordance to what you expect them to do. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Just to appreciate the presentation that has been given to us. It's very rare that we compliment, and I'm sending to Riz that she's my former colleague, so I might be seeing a bit lenient. But I'm just saying, Chair, what makes me happy is to see the inputs of some of the issues that have been raised by the members of the portfolio committee. It's quite appreciated that though she was not there, but our reports have been taken into consideration in compiling this and informing the process that is to be followed. My question is specifically on the task team that has been set up after the landscape itself. I'm a bit worried that shouldn't we have done it the other way? Shouldn't we have established the task team while we announced the landscape, would have finished everything, we announced even how we are going to increase the performance. The impact of the task team after you have re-established, you have dissolved, you have done this, and it's a bit of a concern to me that you are establishing that task team after you have even pronounced the new landscape. As much as you're saying they would focus on, I think you said, on performance, but I thought that you would have, even before announcing that, you look into that and the impact, and when you announce the NSTS 3 together with the landscape, everywhere, all the work would have been done. So that, because where I'm sitting, I think that the department is doing a rush job. Bits rushing through, and not doing a proper, thorough job and producing an end result that would change the system and produce skills that we are looking for. So that's a bit of a concern that I have at this point in time. Secondly, it's and I'm happy that the customer will have an opportunity to come and interact with us, unlike what has happened in the previous, that we not included as portfolio committee in the process, and that I'm happy with it. And Chair, I'm noting some of the issues might relate to the NSTS 3, which we'll be getting as a proposal. But the process thereof, as we re-establish the sectors, looking at their boards and their representation, that's my worry. I know the representation of the boards currently is looking at the employer, the unions. I think that's as far as I know. But generally, is that a fair representation of the board, of a sitter with the responsibility test? Are we not, at this point in time, supposed to look at the constitution of those boards, the people who sit? Yes, the labor and employer are most important and critical. Perhaps maybe that's why you have the challenge of this time, one is this one, the other one fight, because there isn't anyone who's on the middle ground. Shouldn't we look at this re-establishment of this board and how it's constituted, the people who sit on it? The people who sort of bring information, either you call them specialists, either you call them public, that would have different expertise but have interest in that particular sector, who might not necessarily be key players to be able to benefit, to sit in those boards. Either your learners or young people who are beneficiaries, how do these boards get information back from the people who are recipients? Who are not in an, because learners, you have employers and unemployed. But other categories not recognized, the other categories not represented. So I'm saying that constitution, and I'm happy with, because that an outcry was on when we did the CITES. You find the other one is paying 2,000, the other one is paying 300, the other one. And I'm happy to see this change, the standardization on how these boards are run, the standardization. The other issue that I want clarity on specifically, the issue of minister's role. When you say minister is going to intervene, minister will have a role. What does that mean? Because why I'm saying this, we have a situation in higher education councils. You have people who are sitting there representing the minister, but they're not making any impact. We don't want to see the same situation where you say that minister's role, but you end up with people sitting in those boards doing nothing, not achieving what you want to do. So at least give us a specifically to say, when you say minister's role, in which sense? And lastly, the issue of I see on your conclusion, in the conclusion, it says, how do we in future collaborate with PC to take advantage of the information they gather to assist the department? I don't think the issue is only about collaboration on information, but it's acknowledgement of the responsibility and the role that the portfolio committee has in ensuring as being part of the processes, not only after we have interacted with the city, has done the analysis of the report and all those things, then we have comments, but the portfolio committee as a key stakeholder in the process and in the department. I think that needs to be clearly defined. I'm just sitting here thinking, it might put me in trouble with my part, because it's not something that has been consulted upon, but something to the point of even what becomes the role of the portfolio committee in this appointment of the board and other processes. How can we redefine so that we make sure that it's not only the sector where you have domination of the white minority that is leading that particular sector and continue to block entrance of others. So how do we fine-tune the issue, even making sure that the issue of transformation within the CITAS, they understand? I mean, last year one of the CITAS told us that it's not their transformation, it's not their responsibility. So those are some of the challenges that we have. And sitting here, I'm thinking that this portfolio committee has a much bigger role to play in this process so that all of us, because we would be able to assist understanding the separation of powers, but being able to collaborate, but working together in ensuring that this sector works effectively the way we want to see it. Thank you, Chair.
not only domination of white, but also domination by the ANC in those boards.
If we allow members to come back after that given opportunity, it will be problematic. There will soon be chaos in the portfolio committee. But since the approach you have taken, that we should just go in that line, make us not be able to escape. This thing was, I might not have had an input, and it's like it's my turn. And everybody must and the members have just tried to say everything so that some of us who come later don't find any space. But let me just take any angle and see. An exercise one point. In terms of this system, it's like our understanding is limited at just skilling, which may be correct, likely, but that's the core business of the system. But there are other issues in there, just like it was mentioned about transformation agenda of the country, which just do not need us to be satisfied that there's some skilling taking place. Because you find issues of transformation, like as regards procurement, for example, which largely in terms of who are the service providers and all that, it's a matter that does need to be taken into consideration. Issues of growth and development as you skill our people. Let's take the insurance sector for instance. You will find that people are being skilled, fine, but there are those who might have been able to get skilling, but are not able to be within the mainstream in terms of that industry. So they can't grow beyond just getting that skill. But you will then remain with your Sanlam and everybody. They can't be challenged, there can't be any competition. So I'm saying we are fine with the skilling and so on, but let's be able to look beyond just issues of skilling. I haven't personally looked at the NSGS3 effect other than your presentation, but I know that we had a concern as a committee for some time just on one aspect which has come to be so popular, Chair, about which we have not been able to see any real movement.
Yeah, I think members are finished. It's a concern of the committee generally, but mine is a concern. Yes, but it's like the department has adopted a specific line as regards recognition of trialing. I think when you go back, look at that, you'll see there are two approaches in that. There's RPL for access, and that for awarding qualifications, you know. But it's like institutions of higher learning are sort of adopting the one for access in the main for various reasons, and we understand why they would want to do that. It would be more comfortable with that. The other, in their view, is associated with lowering standards, it's so costly for, and so on. But I'm saying, government has taken an approach that we should ensure that the RPL, or people are RPL. And it's a program that we must ensure that it happens. And sooner than later. And it was like we were saying, even if it's 2016, it will be fine if companies or institutions focus on that at that point. And it may be much later. Because we're postponing what is supposed to happen now, as we speak. It may not be that there's funding for that, or but let's be able to address it. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm tempted to say Kilakaleo being the third, you know, from the same party. But I want to add just a few, because I think I'm covered by my colleagues here, not necessarily from the same party, but from the committee who has spoken so far. I'm checking. I like to check things so that I go out understanding exactly what was meant here. On refocusing training, what is meant by moving away from the bias of those with short courses to such that they need to be replaced, those people with short courses? Or are we saying people will no longer go to short courses, and instead of going to short courses, we want people who go to a very long qualification and come back with a... Because when you talk of skills, usually it's short courses. It has been short courses all along. But I just need you to unpack how on refocusing you want to change this particular move and have it done maybe the long way, if I understand it correctly. And on the second page, addressing the governance of the leaders. Yeah, I know that we are informed that there's going to be a standard remuneration rate for board and committee members. Can it be unpacked? Yeah, can it be unpacked more than the way it is here? It's like still we don't know exactly what, where are they moving from and where they are going. It's like, We are only told that the thing, or how were they how serious were the disparities? Disparities. Just how serious, so that we may understand why now we want to bring it on the same level. Because if people don't do the same job, you don't expect them for sure to be paid. And that's what I'm trying to say. We have not been to a school where a principal of a school would have an argument from a teacher who started this year that they need to be on the same line. I just want you to unpack that one. And if you want people who do not carry out their duties, you want to hold them accountable. You see, somebody who doesn't do their work, there's only one way to deal with them. Because, I mean, they don't do their work. Not people who fail because they are not able. Their sentence, to me, says that they are both monsters. They are both members who do not do their work. And it is like, no. And you want to hold them accountable. The whole part. I mean, if they don't do their work, those ones don't do their work. There is one way to deal with them. You fire them. And, yeah, those were the three things that I wanted to add. Otherwise, I'm covered. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. The first one is the direct question to the DDG. I'm trying to understand the issue of the PCTA being re-established for 1 year. And let me just explain it further. You are saying there are 21 sitters. Now, what I want to understand is PCTA number 21, therefore potentially we may end up with 20, or is it number 22 we may actually remain at? So if you could just clarify that. But the other thing, Chairperson, the more I listened to the DDG, I had a sense that she was confusing sitters with NEDLAC. Because you see, sitters are only two constituencies, employer, labor. There is no community. Community is in NEDLAC. You are in sitter, you are either representing the employer or the employee. There is no other. So maybe they're in the other sitters. I just wanted some kind of clarification. The first is a comment on the issue of public service not paying the levy, departments not paying the levy, only contributing. It's a bit problematic, and I think past reports by the Auditor General we have had comments from the Auditor General, because the Auditor General will say, when you're receiving on average maybe 100 million from the department, and when you budget for it, and yet you have no guarantee. That is, there's no obligation, in other words, on the part of departments to pay you. So what if they say, no, you have provided for 100 million, but they say, oh, sorry, you are not getting anything from us this year. So I think that change of legislation is very important. But also, I have been struggling to understand it. You see, this money that the employer contributes, part of it comes from the taxes that the employees pay. Now, if employees in the public service are paying tax, and yet the employer there does not contribute, it makes me understand a bit uncomfortable. But also coming from the education sector, in the ATDP sector, where the biggest employer there is actually the Department of Education, provincial and national. So dependence on revenue from them, therefore, would become very important. But if it's unreliable, it's almost like a donation. You know, you can't take a person to task for not giving you a donation this time around. I gave you last year, I'm not giving. So it would be very important for that part of legislation to be changed. The last but one is a remuneration of board members. Like I say that also Member Mshwana was saying, I served in a board during NSDS 1 and 2, and I can tell you our sitter was paying very well, zero rent as sitting allowance. And it's the board members themselves who took the decision to say, we are here to serve. Of course, people will not run the sitter from, they will be out, not be out of pocket, they will be reimbursed for expenses. But as for sitting there, it was part of a national service. So I don't know, maybe with time, the standardization will also lead to that. Zero rent as a remuneration. The last one, Chairperson, this really makes me uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable. And Honorable Kubai touched a bit on it. Look, let's understand this one, and I'm going to use again the sitter that I understand well. In the board, you have X number of board members. 20 according to the new arrangement. Therefore, 10 coming from employer and 10 coming from labor. And then this 10 of labor is shared proportionally according to the number of each employee organization, the number of members represented by that is proportional. So these people are basically appointed by the unions in this case. And the other one, you have private employer, and then you have public employer. So they share that again proportionally. These people are appointed by their constituencies. I don't understand. Where does the role of the minister come now? If this union has said we are sending Honorable Clopper Lawrence as our representative, what role does the minister have? This person is appointed or elected by the constituency. By the way, the minister is the employer. If the minister wants to send members to the board, let him have a role in appointing departmental officials to the board. He can't have two bites. Constituencies represent and appoint their own representatives. But overall, when it comes to political responsibility, of course the minister has his roles there. But I'm not very sure. Even scary, the idea of the minister having a word in the appointment of CEOs, it also scares me, because I always thought that role belonged to the board. And the board of the CTAS are the ones that carry fiduciary responsibilities. Now, a minister having a say on who can be a board member, and then a say in who can be chair, independent chair, because those independent chairs, I also want to understand who is independent in this country. Who has no interest, whether political or financial or otherwise, in this country? Who can be called independent? I know that we use this word. But I just want to understand what is happening here. Very soon we'll have the minister even appointing the janitor, the cleaner in the CTAS. I don't think that's where we want to go as a country.
So it's my turn now. In our party, the Honourable Mr. Arika Salavestis, my colleague and I decided that he will focus on CFIS. Both of us are new members on this committee. But I'm still tempted to ask a question. It's on the issue of the task teams. Ms. Kubai dealt with the whole issue of the task team in depth with a lengthy question, but I, while I was member of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee, the minister every now and again appointed people on a task team, people in permanent jobs to serve on a task team on a temporary basis. Now, my question is, this task team, is this going to be a permanent institution? Are they going to deal with their job on a permanent basis? And another question linked to it is, on one of your slides, you referred to the team will, amongst other things, look at, and then you bullet a few things. But what are the amongst other things, the other things? I would like to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think you must accept that we welcome all efforts to get the training system in South Africa going. And I would also love to hear the answers to what are the task, the mandate of this task team. I must say we also question the wisdom of appointing the General Secretary of NAHAVU as the chair of this task team, especially if we can deduct from this that the task team will be concentrating on governance issues, constitution of CTAS, etc. It just seems to me as if a legal expert, and hopefully an independent legal expert or academic, would have been more suitable to this task. But Chair, my biggest concern is that if this is the brief or the mandate of the task team, that the real problem has not yet been identified and therefore is not going to be addressed. And that is the issue, that the poor performance of our country, and I must commend the minister again on being very honest in this, in admitting that South Africa's CTAS, and especially the training, the skills development of our people, have been lacking severely. The problem that I see is that we don't have the right thing happening in the workshops, in the classrooms, in our lecture rooms, etc. And it just seems to me as if the ministerial task team is not going to address what I believe is the core problem, and that is of strengthening our training providers, supporting our training providers, making sure that our lecturers know their story, know what skills they need to develop, know their learners and know how to do that. And my question is therefore, when are we going to see that? When are we going to see the Department of Higher Education really strengthening our training providers? I know they're referring to public training providers, meaning the FET colleges, who have got their own serious problems at this point in time. But they have been in the past wonderful initiatives from private and semi-private institutions. Big companies like Kumba or ArcelorMittal and so on, in the past, they've run enormous training facilities, many of which have either closed down or have shrunk to a very small size. And my question is, what are we going to do to again, you know, reopen those training workshops, etc., in this country? And will this form part of the briefing of this task team? Thank you.
I deliberately permitted members to ask questions. I was informed that the DDG has got capacity to absorb all the questions and answer comprehensively later on. Can I give you the opportunity to react to the questions and the comments that have been raised by one of our members?
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the honourable members for the very useful, I must say, questions and comments. I'll try, Chairperson, to respond to them as much as I possibly can, and if where I haven't, we can bring it back again. I take the point on consolidation of the landscape. I think it's a terminology issue that we have to, but I think we have to be clear. So I think I'll talk to you, honourable member, so that we have to phrase it in such a way that it is better understood. You know, some of the things one understands it in their head, but then when you say it to other people, sometimes you don't understand how it will be received and understood. So it's better that we phrase the things in a way that the receiver of the message understands it as well, the way we mean to explain it. Let me just say that as per the FDA, I always say that one of the challenges that we have in this job, at least I identify as my challenge, is that most of what we have to do is prescribed in the Skills Development Act. So we always have to try and follow that process of the Skills Development Act. There are sections which even goes to the extent of saying what should be done by when. You know, by September this has to be done of a year, by November that has to be done of a year. So it adds to the complications. And that's why one of the things that we'll be doing will come to the portfolio committee on this is we proposing the amendment of the Skills Development Act, because we also realize that there are a number of things that we need to do if we were to improve the performance and functionality of the CETAs. But some of the things we can't necessarily do because we are constrained by the Skills Development Act itself. So we have to do something in that regard. So the Skills Development Act, the legal people in the office and some of the colleagues, there was a debate, and I'm still, I read the FDA every day, the Bible, I carry it with me, it's in my laptop back there, and you always have to go to it. And I'm trying to get to a section, and I said the legal people should do that, because there were people who were arguing that, in fact, this relicensing is not necessary. I don't know what that means in legal terms, but you know, any advice and expertise on this would be very welcome. But some of us's understanding is that the CTAs are licensed for 5 years. In 2010, so the skills development function moved from the Department of Labor in 2009 November to the Department of Higher Education and Training. Their license period was coming to an end in 2010, March, end of March. So was the NSDF too, but then the minister extended that for a year to allow for the transition process and the establishment of this function in this new department. So it was extended for a year, and hence we are now relicensing the beginning of the next financial year, which is the 1st of April. So it's a technical process, and as I said, I stand to be corrected on this because I've asked the legal people to really get into this. So it's the term that has been used, and we do have to clarify all of these things, that it is the landscape, which is how many CTAs do we have, what are the economic sectors. So that's the landscape. So that's our understanding of it. But I'm also saying, I'm taking your point that we then have to clarify this, because the question that you raised relates to the others which were raised by the WIP, which is, why does it look like we are approaching this piecemeal? Why didn't we appoint the task team earlier on, make sure that it does its work, and include in that the issue of the landscape, and then have a final thing? I think it would have been ideal to have a process that ran that way, but I think in practice it was a bit difficult, and as members know, this is a new department, and for a while it ran without DDGs even. As I said, I only started in September last year. We still have capacity problems, and funding problems and so on. But that's not excuse, but it's just to say it was much more complex than that. Ideally, I think it should have run that way, so that when you talk about the landscape, then it's a comprehensive issue. You include all of these things, and the definition that you have put forward could have been, in fact, accommodated in that. But I think it was just not practical. So it's the first phase of the landscape, and then there are other phases then, and the next phase, it is that of the ministerial task team to look at the performance related issues. And I just put a few issues on performance. When I say others, there are a few issues that we definitely know that these have to be addressed. So for example, over the 10 years, what has happened is the scope and mandate of CTAs have been expanded to an extent that I think most of us do not know what is it that the CTAs are supposed to be doing exactly. And some of the CTAs themselves do not know even. Or they know, but then it's bad, and other things. So when there's a challenge, then some of it gets added to the CTA list, and the CTAs have to address the challenge. So we know for sure that if the CTAs are to function effectively and efficiently, we have to make sure that their scope and mandate is clearly defined. We have to take out of the CTAs some of the things that they should not be doing. We have to take out of the CTAs some of the things that lead to the challenges that we have in the CTAs, the corruption and so on. So the CTAs, for example, when it comes to training providers, they're the players and the referee and the coach and everything else. And we need to address that. So they say who the training provider should be, what training they should provide. They accredit the training provider. They accredit the programs that they should be providing. So they do everything in relation to that. They accredit the quality and so on. And then you're left with the situation which we have now. And we need to address that. So there are a few things that we know that they have to be addressed. But then there are other things that, as I indicated, the terms of reference, the approach that we are taking is that we are not finalizing the terms of reference. We have the draft terms of reference from the department's perspective. These are the issues that we're putting on the table. And we are saying to the team, go out there, go interact with other people who've got experience and expertise in this, and expand but manage your terms of reference. But make sure that the other issues that would be raised by other people who have the experience and expertise in this area are also taken care of. And that is why they will also be coming to the portfolio committee members to say, based on your experience and expertise, if we were to improve the performance of CTAS, what are the few other things that we have to look into to expand our terms of reference, but also make sure that it's a manageable process. We don't want a situation where you have a task team that tries to do everything, and then at the end it doesn't do anything, and then it was just a waste of time and resources. So I tried to link those questions, and I hope they are addressed. But we can take this even outside, it's fine, or come back to it. And yes, part of the exercise is to say, what is the vision of the CTAS? I think it's all related to that. What is the scope, the mandate? What is the vision? What do we want to see the CTAS doing? And that vision, I must say, in our heads at least, has to be guided by the new establishment of the Department of Higher Education and Training, which in principle is bringing together higher and further education and training and skills development, resources and infrastructure. So conceptually, we have an integrated education and training and skills development system. So the vision of all our institutions has to be guided by that. One of the things that we are going to have to deal with, and in the amendment of the Skills Development Act, in the interaction with the Portfolio Committee, and in redefining the mandate and scope and vision of CTAS, we have to deal with it, is there has been a tendency to see the CTAS and the Skills Development Levy resource as a resource that caters for people who are in employment. And then there is a category of, we have to make sure that we also train the unemployed. And then there's some fuzziness and no clarity on the details of this. And what has happened over the years is, we've had a situation where we have biased our training towards the short courses and skills programs, but have not paid enough attention on the training programs that lead to a qualification. So billions of rand later, years later, and many institutions later, we're still talking about a significant shortage of artisans and engineers. We still have a problem with young people who are at universities, they've passed, but then they don't have funding. There are problems with NSFAS. It's not my area, but I know that, you know, from a departmental point of view. But the issue is, we have these resources, we have the money, So there's a lot of money sitting in NSF, for example. You know, it's another discussion that we will have, maybe not today, but later. We have a lot of money sitting in NSF. And then you have young people who cannot get their results because they cannot pay the fees. That's not right. You have young people who cannot enter education. We have a huge increase in matric pass this year. But, you know, we've had many young people who have passed matric in the past years. And they can't enter university because they do not have money to enter university. But we have the skills development levy resource. And over the years, what has happened is the CETAs have not been able to ensure that this resource is also used for that purpose. Broadly, we have not focused on investing in skills development for people who are going to be new entrants into the labor market. And that's why we're not paying or funding artisan development training programs through this resource. We are not funding the training of engineers. We are not funding the training of architects, of other professionals. The construction sector, for example, some of the concerns that the stakeholders have there is that their skills needs are not catered for in the sector, in the sector, because it's largely professional. And the only training that the sector does or facilitates is the training on short courses skills programs. So we cannot have that kind of a situation continue. Skills programs, short courses are important, yes, but then we have to balance. The last statistics that we had are that only about a third of the training facilitated and financed through this resource leads to a qualification, only a third. So about 70% of it doesn't lead to a qualification. What we have also not done over the years is we have not invested in strengthening our public institutions through this resource. So we haven't been funding FET colleges and strengthening them. We haven't been funding universities and strengthening them. What has happened over the years is we have created a situation where an industry of private training providers has proliferated in the sector. Most of them are not accredited. Some are accredited, but then the quality of training that they provide is questionable. When we come to the NSDS 3, we will talk about, because those are some of the things that we are trying to address in NSDS 3. But all of these are related to that the CETAs must understand what their mandate is, what is the broader vision of this country. We have the challenge of young people. We have over 3 million young people between 18 and 24 who are not in school, not in education or any form of training. We have this resource. We have to utilize it. Now, the CETAs are also a resource in this post-school landscape. How do they then play a role to make sure that 5 years later, we're not talking about 6 million young people who are not in education, training, or employment? We have to reduce that number. So I'm trying to link these questions and saying we are also recognizing skills programs, but we have to have some kind of a balance in that regard. And the monitoring I put just one slide there talking about monitoring and didn't get into the detail. But what we are doing is we're working on a monitoring and evaluation framework. And it has to link to all of this. It has to link to monitoring in the department of whereby we are able to play our oversight responsibility and role. It has to lead to monitoring that leads to the portfolio committee, for example, being able to use the information. The Auditor General being able to use the information. Everyone must be able to use this information and link this as well to the broader monitoring and evaluation framework of government
there are targets, for example, in that all the ministers have agreed on. We have all of these targets. So, for example, it says we must produce, in Minister of Higher Education and Training, one of the targets is that we must produce 10,000 artisans. The department on its own is not going to be able to do that. It is going to do that in relation to the FET colleges and the CETAs and everybody else and the employers. And the monitoring framework that we are talking about links to all of these things. The new growth path as well has got the targets on the production of artisans. So we have to make sure that all of these are linked. So it's the monitoring that would enable all of us to have information and be able to set targets and monitor those targets. I will get to the details of that when we talk to the NSDS 3 as well. How do we make sure that we have internal control that when the CETA doesn't perform, when we take action, it is related to this? We're sitting in a situation now, the members would know, where construction CETA is challenging the minister, has taken the minister to court, because the minister was saying, you are not performing, so I'm putting an administrator, and they are challenging the minister. I'm trying to find a way to put this as best and polite as possible, but I'll say this. What has happened and coming out of the challenge from the lawyer from Construction CETA is we are saying to them, for the past 5 years, you haven't been performing. You've got qualified audits. Except for 2009-2010. And they're saying to us, but you can't tell us about all these other years. Last year we improved, so we got an unqualified audit. And I'm sitting here speaking, representing government, that as government we cannot afford a situation where a CETA or any public entity or anyone does wrong for 2-3 years and we don't act, and then the fourth year we act and that action is challenged. So we need to have a monitoring and evaluation framework that allows action immediately. The Skills Development Act is clear. It says Section 15, if the CETA is not performing, if there's financial mismanagement and so on, the minister can put that CETA under administration. Now, what I'm saying is we have to move to a situation where it doesn't take us 4, 5, 6 years to act. We have to act immediately. And some of the things that we are doing internally is to make sure that we have those controls. But it's no good just acting, because then you sit and then you act. We also need to get to a situation where throughout the year, when we pick up problems, we support and intervene, because our responsibility is not just to act when there's no performance, but we have to also support these institutions and make sure that they perform. So we will be putting in place measures to make sure that happens. The issue of the board representation, it is, you know, I think members will give us credit that we at least are being honest and saying this is what we are proposing. It is a complex issue. Let me first correct myself. Honourable Member is correct. I think because I speak to the CETAs most of the time, yes, the CETA is not NEDLAC. The representation does not replicate that of NEDLAC. But what has happened in most CETAs is we tend to talk about the community, and the community is a private provider, in fact. So the employers in some CETAs, they divide themselves and then they get a community of private providers to represent or to be represented in the board.
So that's the community. But the community, as we know, the community is not represented in the CETA board. Yes, it is the employers and organized labor. And I think in your description of the employers, the 10 portion that is provided to the employers, it also includes the informal the employers as well in some CETAs, not in all, but in some CETAs. That composition is prescribed for in the Skills Development Act. For the past 10 years, we have learned that that is creating problems. We need to address that. How do we best address it? Yes, the minister, I think, in his speech to this to the CETA forum, did also say that independent is a very relative and loaded term, and we have to define it. And yes, we have to, because no one is independent. But the principle is that, I think one of the members did indicate that we need to get to a situation where in the board we have people who have interest in the sector and interest in skills development, who are going to take their role in the CETA board seriously and make sure that whatever they do to make sure that we all achieve a better impact and outcome with regard to skills development. What we are also, it is a loaded term, but in there, we are also saying to the employers and union representatives, take this seriously when you elect the people who are going to represent you in the board. Elect the people who will have interest, who have expertise, and will pursue the interest of the sector. We have a situation where in many boards, in fact, some of the employers send some people at very low level who have no delegation for making decisions and so on. So it's just compliance. And we need to move away from that situation. So independent means a lot of things. But we need to try and unpack it better and make sure that we don't resolve a problem by creating another problem. We can never get 100% clean thing, but we have to do something at least. And I think we all have to work towards making sure that this happens. And we don't want a situation where, yes, you have people elected by the minister, and then they sit there, they make no contribution of significant impact. But then because they're elected by the minister, then they think they are untouchable. So we need to make sure that something like that doesn't happen. I don't have the figures on the disparities between the board fees. We can do a calculation and share, but there is a disparity. As the honourable member had said, you were not paid, but your expenses were catered for. And then you have a situation where other board members earn a lot of money just for the sitting. So you have no payment whatsoever, zero payment, and then you have payment which can range from 300 to about 1,000 or 3,000. So there are those disparities. And in many respects, there is a correlation between the payment of board members and the corruption and malfunction of the CETA and the number of board meetings that are held. So, you know, some people budget for that it is an income, it's a source of income. So for every sitting, you know, you're going to get 1,000. So why not have meetings every month, because now you know that you are going, there is that income is guaranteed. So we try to address most of the things. We are not doing a perfect job, but that's why we need assistance with some of the things and most of the things, in fact. but we'll try and get the figures as well. And it's also related to the issue of the CEOs as well. There's no correlation between what the CEO and the size and scope of the data. So you have CEOs who earn about 1.5 million in one sitter, and then you have another CEO in another sitter who earns about 900,000. So we need to manage that. And then you find that the CEO is paid that much and the sitter is the worst performer even. So we need to manage all of that and make sure that we bring them together. And yes, one of the things that we have to do, and I'm very appreciative that it was raised, I think we have missed that, is that we need to make sure that alongside that, we provide the training for board members. So we need to find a training program. They have to go for training so that all board members understand what they should do, what their responsibilities are, what their roles are. So that if they do not perform, then they are held accountable. And yes, being held accountable could result in being fired. It will depend on what action the minister decides to take. So the minister's role is a loaded, in this, it is a loaded term. We appreciate that, but we also need to make sure that we manage it properly and it doesn't, we don't add problems on top of problems. So in all of that, we'll make sure that we take care of it. When in October sometime, in fact, the minister went to NEDLAC, and the members of NEDLAC did indicate that the way the Skills Development Act prescribes the constitution of board members is limiting because it is not taking into account the other stakeholders in the representation. And it's something that when we amend the Skills Development Act, we'll have to make sure that we take that into account. So the young people who are the recipient of this training are not represented, and then we need to clean up those issues. The recognition of prior learning. I wish I had colleagues here who I can pass some of the difficult questions to, but... some of these things, my approach, Chair and Honourable Members, is that while we're doing this the way we're doing it, it's not a reporting and then go away. It's a relationship. And so this for me is just it's a process and it will be ongoing and some of the things will come back to them with better details and we clean them up as we interact, you know. Now, recognition of prior learning, we have a big challenge. At least I know some of the biggest problems that we are trying to address and then there are smaller problems in that and then there are things that we're just not getting right. Honourable Member, let me give you an example of some of the problems that we're experiencing with recognition of prior learning. When I come back next time, my head will be much clearer, and I think I would have grasped some of this thing better. In the Skills Development Act, there is still a section that recognizes the Manpower Training Act. There's what we call, I think, Section 28 learners. And those are the RPL. So it kind of prescribes the RPL process. One of the problems that we're having is that my colleague who deals with this explains it much better even and says, you have employers who have Zakhele. So I'll use Zakhele because he's my colleague and he won't take offense. They have Zakhele who has been working there for years. And Zakhele's job has been to change globes and then screw the plugs of the lines and so on. And between Zakhele and the employer, there's a conflict with regard to upgrading of the status, the employment status and pay improvement and so on. The employer is saying, but you don't have a qualification. And then Zakhele says, but I've been doing this job for years. To resolve the problem, the employer writes a letter for Zakhele, because that's what my understanding is, that is what the Manpower Training Act section prescribes as the process. The employer then writes a letter for Zakhele to say Zakhele has been working as an electrician for the past 5 years. Therefore, he qualifies for RPL. Then Zakhele takes that letter to Indlela and books a trade test, because Zakhele then needs to do a trade test for him to pass and then qualify as an electrician artisan. So Zakhele takes that letter, goes to Indlela, books a trade test, and then writes, is afforded an opportunity to write the test. And he fails and fails and fails and fails. And that is why one of the other problems that we'll get to when we talk to FET, members talk to FET, there is an FET branch as well in the department. When we talk about artisan training program as well, one of the things that the challenge that we have to address is the high failure rate of people taking trade tests. There are a number of problems, but I'm saying one of the problems that contributes towards that high failure rate is that problem of RPL. We are not using RPL as effectively as we should. And there are many people who do go through RPL process and they do pass their trade test and get the certificate. But it's not that many, and we have to improve on that. But also we have to make sure that this abuse, as I made the example about Zakhele, doesn't happen too often, because then it says it puts us back when we look at the number of people who take trade tests versus those who pass. So the failure rate is high. So there are problems with RPL that we need to rectify, and some of them we are working on them. Well, honourable member, PCTA is PCTA number 21. Very soon I will know all the CTAs by heart, but I'm not there yet, but very soon I'm going to know them by heart. But PCTA is CTA number 21. Yes, we may have 20 CTAs, but from the beginning of April 2011, we have 21 CTAs, including PCTA. And then that process will unfold. And the concerns that have been raised by other members with regard to participation of the public sector, those are the concerns that we also have. And the question is then, how do we resolve this? And that's why that task team that has been set up, I don't know if we'll get a 100% resolution that satisfies everybody, but we have to get to a resolution, because the situation as it is, we cannot afford to have the situation continue like that. And hence the proposal that let's re-establish PCTA for 1 year and resolve at least some of the fundamental problems and get to a position where we say, do we now re-establish PCTA as a CETA or not? And that's the process that will be embarked on. Which, as I said, that unfortunately, the ministerial task team that has been set up will not be looking Okay, there are two ministerial task teams. The Minister Nzimande and Minister Baloyi task team will be looking at the PCTA, but the CETA performance task team will not be looking at the issue of the PCTA in broadly. You know, it will be there, but it is not in their mandate. But yes, we have to resolve this issue of 1 year. You know, the CETA has targeted that it is going to receive 100 million from Department A, and then Department A decides, well, sorry, not this year. That inconsistency, we have to resolve it. And the only way to resolve it, I think, is to have that decision by cabinet, at least, before we get to, while we're working on the SDA, at least have a decision by cabinet, how do we address this, because it is impacting on the performance of CETA. And it makes it difficult as well when the CETA comes before the committee, and then you ask them questions. They can make an excuse and say, but it's because the government, Department A, has promised us and they didn't deliver.
It seems that there's an emergency. Been raised by Okumela.
Chair, with due respect, it's not like us to interject when other members are talking. But I wanted you, Chair, to just allow her some time to wrap on it. I was mindful of the fact that we were still to receive another presentation, and time may not necessarily be on our side. But if there was going to be a minute or two, just to fire the wrap, and we'll look at the process going forward, just on this part.
It would seem that we may not be able to cover all the presentations that you intended to give the committee. Our expectation was that by 12 o'clock we should conclude this meeting because many members have indicated that they've got some commitments that they have at 12 o'clock. And I'll permit you to just wrap up with the few questions that may be remaining. There are a lot of other questions that could have arisen in the course of your input, which questions I hope would be clarified in subsequent interactions that we may have in the future. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, I'm on my last page, which has got only three questions on it, and two of which I think have been responded. So it is, I am wrapping up. The task team, interministerial task team, is not a permanent task team because these people are involved in their other responsibilities, and the key question that they have to resolve together with us as a department is then how does the work get done? That has to be done. As I said, once they finalize the TOR after the interaction with other key stakeholders, including the portfolio committee, then the question is how does this work get done, because it is not their permanent appointments or their everyday job. So that would be resolved with them. Chair, I have spoken about the training providers. In NSDS3, which we are not going to receive, as you indicated today, but we'll receive later, we are talking about strengthening of public training providers, particularly the FET, and I've touched on this earlier. Chair, there were a lot of questions which were useful as well, and I tried to respond to most of them. I think I have responded to all of them. And I do appreciate that we have time constraints. I've been here 4 months, haven't interacted with the portfolio committee. This was the first, and it was the first briefing that they got that would be comprehensive on this. We will set up other meetings going forward and make sure that we have frequent interactions. And I will clean up that slide that says collaboration. It's not just collaboration. The PC is a key stakeholder in this area. Thank you, Chair, members.
Let me take the opportunity to thank the DDG and her other colleagues for their presentation. It has been very comprehensive. You fairly responded to the questions that are advanced by the committee members, and I think you also take note of the comments that are meant to constructively strengthen your approach to the issues. We have noted what they were saying in regards to the qualities of the people that said the task team to be able to discharge the responsibility of assessing the performance of the CTAS. And it's also our expectation that the scope and mandate of the CTAS will be properly clarified as to be certain as to what are the strategic imperatives that have got to be addressed. Looking at our developmental needs as a country, looking at the agenda that this government would like to see us executing. Let me also take the opportunity to thank members of the committee for their wonderful inputs. We will give an opportunity for the department to engage our officials as to when we can structure a day for the other presentation. And I would like to say this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Lastly, there has been a question raised about the trip to study tour. It has not been cancelled, it has been advanced, but it has been rescheduled.